Hi, I'm Don Genova, and you're listening to a podcast recorded in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, called All You Can Eat. The news arriving earlier this month from Statistics Canada wasn't good. Results from last year's Canadian Community Health Survey revealed that 1 in 4 adult Canadians are considered to be obese. 9% of teenagers are in the same boat, a figure that has tripled over the past 25 years.
Supersize the American way. Throw it down all day, every day. Supersize.
That's the theme song from the film Supersize Me by Morgan Spurlock. The film has won a fistful of awards and captured an Academy Award nomination for Best Documentary. Alarmed by the rise in American obesity and a dependency of many Americans on fast food outlets, Spurlock decided to use himself as a guinea pig and document his diet for 30 days.
I mean, what would happen if I ate nothing but McDonald's for 30 days straight? Would I suddenly be on the fast track to becoming an obese American? Would it be unreasonably dangerous? Let's find out. I'm ready. Supersize me.
For Morgan Spurlock, eating nothing but food from McDonald's for 1 month caused an alarming change in his health. He gained over 20 pounds and suffered headaches, depression, and chest pains. But no one forced him to eat the food. He did so voluntarily, while asking a great question about the fast food industry and its relationship to the obesity epidemic.
Are the food companies solely to blame for this epidemic? Where does personal responsibility stop and corporate responsibility begin? Is fast food really that bad for you?
I had that same question in mind when I sat down in a McDonald's restaurant in Toronto with Dr. Harvey Anderson, a University of Toronto professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences and Physiology. Here is our entire conversation.
I guess my first question is, why do people like eating so-called junk food in the first place?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call any food junk food. The issue is, why do people make the choices they do? Because too much of everything, including mother's love, can not be good for you either. So it's a matter of choice and balance. And I think the issue really is that we have so much easy availability of foods in all forms, so many restaurants. You can hardly be, at least in the city, a block away from any form of restaurant or snack or whatever you wish to purchase if you just feel a little bit hungry. And we also have more money, and even kids have the money to just spend $5 for something on the spur of the moment. So it's all conducive to not waiting till you get home and to eat supper, or whatever it might be, the major meal of the day.
But a lot of the choices out there have higher levels of fat and sugar in them, right?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and there were lots of choices at home on the farm that were high in fat and sugar, I can tell you that. And, animal products and butter and lard, and we were fine, but we were active. So I just don't think there's a magic bullet of saying, if we take this product off the market, or if we attack a quick service restaurant, or if we attack something in Loblaws or Whole Foods or mainline grocery stores, we're missing the point. We have a very high quality food supply available, and every individual has to make the choice that's appropriate for him or herself. And we need to teach children how to make better choices. I agree with you that there are products out there that are not nutritionally as sound by any means as other choices. But why do we make those choices so easily available to children rather than the good or better choices that, for example, milk versus other forms of beverages or whatever it might be? Now, all forms can fit into a diet, but I can't be prescriptive and say, for this child this is appropriate and for that child, it's inappropriate, and they aren't making the right choices for themselves. If they're sitting in front of a TV all day and being couch potatoes, they're going to gain weight no matter what they eat.
Plus, they're marketed to when they're sitting there.
That's true. So their food choices are formed in many ways. You're absolutely right. So I think we have to think of bigger ways and better ways of empowering, especially kids, to be making the right choice. And I don't know how you get to that. I'm not a marketing person. But I think, this is why I support McDonald's and the direction they're going, because they are a powerful marketing force.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about, is how does your work with McDonald's try to make a difference?
Well, you can already see the difference our advisory group to McDonald's has made. That is in the menu choices that are up in the restaurant now, the salads, the deli sandwiches, the lower fat products, the smaller serving sizes. All those choices are there. For example, the Happy Meal, you can mix and match, a hamburger with some yogurt and an orange juice. A very healthy choice. Or you can add milk, or you can add water, or if you want a diet soft drink. I mean, the choices are all there. It's getting the consumer to make those choices. And I certainly hope more consumers buy the salads and the new menu items that we have. But the point is that with the health campaign that McDonald's has of delivering an activity message, and actually a lot of their messages are free of any mention of food, but trying to get across to kids the concept of energy balance. Each child has to have somewhere ingrained in their mind that it is important not to be over fat, not to gain too much fat, because it's unhealthy in the long run. And it programs the child then for a long life of unhealthy living, if you will. So we need to empower and strengthen the recognition that what you put in and what you expend is going to determine whether you become fat or not and have a long life history of health problems. So my point is, the first thing is, let's keep an eye on what the main issue is. That's the accumulation of too much body fat. And you can do that either by eating too much, the wrong choices for yourself as an individual, or by not having enough activity. And, like I say, back on the farm, we may not have had what everyone thought was a great diet, but we were active all the time. So I come from a family that lived a long time. And so it's just not as simple as saying, move this food away from because we're always going to have to make choices that are appropriate for ourselves.
That's the hard part, because it is a magic formula, right? The eat less, exercise more, lose weight.
That's right.
What kind of role do you think our governments would play in something like that then?
I think the government has to be much more encouraging in not only education, but also in the research that brings across the health benefits of proper food choices. And, we're in what we call a functional food era, where we're trying to examine and understand the good components that exist in vegetables, for example, fruits, that are beyond just what we used to think about. Well, does it have vitamin C? Does it have a B vitamin? We now know that there are also kinds of bioactive ingredients in the from blueberries, and from Saskatoon berries, all the wonderful fruits and vegetables that we do have in this country as well. If you turn to dairy products, there are functional components in dairy products that are health benefit and associate with leaner body weight rather than obesity. So I think if we can get out more messages to the public that if you eat this way, you're not going to have to take a drug. You can control both your body weight as well as your blood lipids and risk factors for disease by appropriate choices, then we'll make some directional change. If, in my view, if the government will allow us to make more health claims on foods that are driven by evidence-based science, experimental science, then again we would be serving the public well. But I have a real complaint that our government will not allow health claims, and I think that's a huge mistake in communicating with the public.
The big corporations that make their profits from making foods that may not be appropriate for all people to choose, or they're choosing to consume too many of them, they have a bottom line. And How, you know, I'm sure there's not a direct correlation between, you know, okay, McDonald's is being sued because two kids blame McDonald's for becoming obese, but how do the corporations look at their bottom line and say, it might be bad for us to offer more healthy choices? I mean, it's kind of a non sequitur, but that's the way it might shake out in some places.
I think you can turn to food stores such as, for example, Whole Foods and the Loblaws, where you have organic foods. You have a whole range of foods to allow choices, and people do make those choices. So I don't think you can say that you only make money on the foods that maybe not as nutrient-dense as we would like to be. You also can make money if the public buys the foods that are put in front of them.
What if they're more expensive, though, like a lot more expensive?
You know what? That's a reality. I mean, fresh food, there's a lot more waste in producing salads and selling it in a restaurant than there is in producing, taking a frozen hamburger out of the fridge and throwing it on. There's no waste. People doing the cooking and serving can't make mistakes. Again, if you look at McDonald's, for example, $45 million meals served a day and no incidents of food poisoning. I mean, this takes high quality control and a great deal of care in delivering your food products. And the grocery stores are exactly the same, the big chains. So it's, again, the question of, you know, why do people make the wrong choice? Is it purely based on economics? Is it purely based on the fact that I don't want to cook anymore? What is it? I don't know. You can, you know, if you talk about the more expensive foods, but if you take those, you know, as you know, there was a time in this country where if you wanted a tomato in wintertime, you just didn't have it. Now we have it, and it's actually quite inexpensive. But it is true, you can buy, say, a bag of potato chips that have, you know, 800 calories or 1,000 calories in it for 80, 90, 100, you know, $1.20. Whereas if you buy three tomatoes, you know, for the same price, you might have 100 calories. So it's, there is a difference. It's true, because we are a grain-producing North America. Carbohydrates are inexpensive, and processing, and we have lots of vegetable oil and oil products, and that's inexpensive. Just ask any farmer who's can't, you know, earn their living because they're not being paid enough. We've got too much of the stuff. So it is a big issue that starts from the farm gate to the what's available in the grocery stores, and then what people make as a choice. But we're not going to solve the problem by just taking off the shelf, the government moving in, taking off the shelf all inexpensive, high-calorie-dense products. And anyway, you know, we really need to educate people and say, this is healthy. Instead of taking a negative approach, why don't we take the positive approach? And then why don't we also then have for people that maybe are more marginal budgets and need some food security, why can't we address that issue in a different way? You're not going to help them by taking away the inexpensive foods that are high in calories. If you're hungry, you know, you need something to eat. And you certainly feel better if you eat carbohydrate and get some energy.
So. I guess when it comes to choice, we have other chains like Burger King is now doing what they're calling an enormous omelet. It's got 42 grams of fat in it. The Hardee's, which I don't think we get in Canada, Hardee's Monster Thick Burger has 107 grams of fat in it in a single meal. Why are these companies still putting out stuff like that?
I certainly can't answer for them. I am not happy that they're doing this. Obviously, they feel there's a market niche for this sort of thing, but, you know, if I'd advise a family to take a knife along and cut it four ways and sit down and eat the burger, that's fine. But, you know, it's, again, portion size. And we know that, you know, like my mother always used to say, you know, when I was a kid and I put too much on my plate, my eyes are bigger than my stomach. And, in fact, I was just reading a paper in obesity research which shows that if you enlarge the eyes by large serving sizes, people tend to eat more. So it's to me, it is not a good idea to be marketing that sort of strategy. And it's, you know, we have the 60-ounce steaks in Texas, and it's just bizarre. So the point that we learn from this is that people have to smarten up and make their better choices for themselves and ignore the hype. But again, it has to be an individual choice, because if you happen to be an athlete or a construction worker, with a few now that are expending 5,000 calories a day, well, then that 1,400 calorie burger is not going to do any harm. But for most sedentary adults or kids, it is not the calorie, ideal calorie intake situation that you would want.
Is that, you talked about, you know, we produce grains and oils. Is this very much a North American phenomenon that has spread a little bit into European and Asian countries because of just the death of distance and more of the North American-based companies opening up overseas?
Well, China, Brazil, there are a lot of parts of the world now that are pretty big grain producers in their own right. And again, you know, I've been going to China for 20 years, and, you know, over the years I've seen they've basically always had their own version of what we would call, you know, the potato chips and the savory snacks and so on. They just took a different form. But they, my goodness, they were there 20 years ago. And, you know, again, catering to the taste of the population, and again, using the carbohydrate components of the agricultural production, and including rice, of course. And that seems to appeal to people. But what limited people from getting obese at that time was, of course, the salaries and the wages were so small that something like that would be a very special treat. And certainly I remember, you know, even on the farm, having one of the large bottles of ginger ale when we were out working in the field, or come in and we had it chilled down, we'd split it four ways, you know. So this notion of treats were always there, but you didn't buy it just walking down the street and stopping at a store and buy, you know, large bottles and so on that we have available today. So those things have developed in China, and you again have to think about, are we being, you know, so controlling by going over and saying it is the westernization of their diet that is causing the problem? Or shouldn't we be saying we're glad that they are developing economically so some people can afford to get fat? You see, because it means a healthier population, and really the food supply determines the economics of a population, that is, and therefore ultimately the health of the population. Since the Industrial Revolution, agriculture and the agri-food industry has done more to generate health and economic return than any other aspect of society.
But doesn't our affluence also lead to problems with obesity?
You're absolutely right. Now we've gone in North America too far. So let's not blame what we do in North America as a cause of the worldwide. In fact, there's more obesity outside of North America because of the population. So even if you have a small amount of population getting fat, the numbers are much greater outside North America than within North America. But we do have in North America, between overweight and obese people, 55% of the population, adult population. So our affluence has bought us a lot of body fat. And which part of the equation is the worst for an individual? Is it because you eat too much and make the wrong food choices, or that you don't exercise, or both? That's why for every individual, every home, I mean, think of all the kids that might, you know, the logic of suing McDonald's because a couple of kids get fat and say they ate at McDonald's. Well, you're going to start suing your parents, you know, because maybe your mother's a really good cook. And, you know, we have a lot of people, or your father's really a good cook. And so you get fat eating at home. So do you sue, or do you, you know, where's the responsibility? And I think what we need to do is, as we've done with smoking in the schools and, you know, other aspects of drug use and so on, I think we have to start emphasizing much more that obesity is not a cosmetic issue. Obesity is a long-term health issue. And why do you want to get yourself, you know, recognize how serious it is that if you smoke, then 20, 30, 40 years later, you're likely to have lung cancer. Well, what's the likelihood of having dying prematurely because you're obese as a 10-year-old child? I think the we have to find out how to get more effective health messages across to children, and I really think the school has to take more responsibility in these areas.
Why did you choose to work with McDonald's to kind of affect some sort of change?
I work with a number of food companies to make health changes, if you will. And you know what? These companies are amenable to advice from their health and science advisory committees. The thing that I find exciting, at least in the U.S. and working with the companies, is because the health system in this, or the food and drug regulations in the states allow health claims. So let's say you're working with a company like General Mills that produces whole grain cereals, and you can then design some studies that show that consumption of whole grain, high fiber cereals, that includes Kellogg, Nabisco, and others as well, then people will buy those products. And there's a simple label on there that says this does, and it has to be based on scientific evidence. So we have a much better dynamic for nutrition and health research, and in medical schools as well as in, you know, the customary locations of food science, nutrition faculties, and agriculture. And I believe then that by working with the companies from the inside, if you will, and bringing to them the health trends and the opportunities that their products have in the delivery of not only a health message but long-term health benefits, that they will move in, and that's what they will also market. And we see that proof, the increase in fiber consumption, that they've gone into cereal, ready-to-eat cereals, into breads, you know, the psyllium, both soluble and insoluble fiber. Loblaws has Too Good to Be True line, and working with Dr. David Jenkins at the University of Toronto to understand how you might be able to use, if you will, foods that are available in the grocery store to lower your blood cholesterol as strongly as with Lipitor, which is, or one of these statins that we use for lowering blood cholesterol. I think this is marvelous stuff, and you only get there by working with the companies.
It works. You've seen it work. You're just giving me some examples. And one of the common, misconceptions out there is that McDonald's stopped supersizing because of the Supersize Me movie. And, in fact, that's not true, right?
Absolutely not. When we first met as an advisory committee, this was a mess. And that was a year before Supersize Me came out. And, of course, then once you make these recommendations, I'm sure McDonald's had to think of the business impact, talk to their franchisees, and they had started the message. When we met with them again, they said, we're going down that road. And then Supersize Me came out, I think, about 2 months later after that meeting, or sometime in that time frame. And I was so disappointed, because then it just distracted, you know, everything from the main message. And then it turned into saying, well, they were being defensive. That's why they quit Supersize. It wasn't true at all. I mean, nothing in life is perfect in terms of timing is everything, right? but they've stuck to their guns and done the menu development and are always searching for better ideas. So if you've got a good idea, well, raise it with McDonald's.
Thanks for your time.
That was Dr. Harvey Anderson, a professor of nutrition at the University of Toronto. He also works for McDonald's, advising the fast food giant on introducing healthier menu choices. Here's a last word from Morgan Spurlock on what he thinks of corporate responsibility.
But why should these companies want to change? Their loyalty isn't to you, it's to the stockholders. The bottom line, they're a business, no matter what they say. And by selling you unhealthy food, they make millions. And no company wants to stop doing that. If this ever-growing paradigm is going to shift, it's up to you. But if you decide to keep living this way, go ahead. Over time, you may find yourself getting as sick as I did. I guess the big question is, who do you want to see go first? You or them?
That brings us to the end of another edition of All You Can Eat. My website is www.pacificpalate.com, where you can find some links and suggested reading from this week's story. I'm Don Genova. Bye for now.